Welcome. You are now linked to your telecom retirement, the podcast that dials you directly into over 30 years of experience from certified financial planner Dennis O'Keefe. To make your telecom retirement your go-to guide for successfully rerouting your future, press the follow button. Now please hold while we connect you to your host, Dennis O'Keefe.
Hey, how are we doing today? RJ, how's things going? We got RJ, the producer here.
Yeah, things are going well. I'm looking forward to this podcast and hearing what you have to say about being a financial advisor.
Yeah. We're going to talk about how to pick a financial advisor. It's one of those things that obviously I'm a financial advisor. It's I'm always amazed at how people pick me. And I think a lot of people struggle with, well, you know, what do I do? What are the criteria? How should I, you know, what should I be looking at? And kind of demystifying that whole process for people today.
Well, it's tough, especially you get people. I can recall from our experience, we moved into a new area, and then we had to find a financial advisor. And when you're in, you know, you're new in the area, it makes it even more difficult.
So, yeah, absolutely.
You know, how would you, I guess we'll start right away. How would you recommend to people who are moving into a new area? How do you find the financial advisor?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the toughest thing is, you know, the nice thing, I'll say it this way, is I have clients that are all over the United States now. And that's something I didn't have 20 years ago is the relationships I've developed. The people have gone, especially from here in the Northeast, they go to Florida. It's like a law. You turn 75, you have to move to Florida. So I have a lot of clients in Florida. I have a couple of clients in California, two in Colorado, which is strange. A couple in South Carolina, one in Tennessee. Just all over is you don't necessarily, if you have a good relationship with your current advisor, when you move, you don't have to switch. You can stick with that person because of Zoom and phone and email and all of that. It just allows us to maintain those relationships, which that was hard. I'll tell you, 25 years ago, I had a great client, Ellen. I can't think of Ellen's last name. It's probably but she retired from at the time it was 9X. That's how long ago it was.
Wow. Okay.
And she moved to one of the Carolinas, and she went to work for Duke Energy.
Okay.
And she was retired, but she was bored. She was single. She was probably in her late 50s. She got a really early retirement offer. And then one day she calls me up and she said, you know, look, I just need somebody local. Because it's 25 years ago and not everybody used the email and online access of things was very tough. So, you know, she moved on to somebody down in the Carolinas, and that just doesn't need to happen anymore. So it allows people to cross that geographic border.
Because trust is huge in your field. I mean, you need their money. So I can see why it's easier and more important to be able to stay in touch. And, you know, with like we're doing right now, talking through a computer, it makes it easier than to stay in touch and be able to get consistent advice. As a financial advisor, the word fiduciary comes up.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Fiduciary is it's an old school word. And it really means it defines somebody who has to act in your best interest. And I'll put that has to act in massive quotes because there are some hard walls to that and there are some soft walls to that. A fiduciary has to look at your best interest. Probably the best example is of what a fiduciary is not is the quintessential car salesman. The quintessential car salesman is not a fiduciary. They are specifically in an adversary relationship. I remember watching, whether it was 2020 or Dateline or whatever, and they were doing a sting operation. It was one of those, you know, news sting operations on dealers getting one over on customers. And so they got this guy that had a hidden mic, and this is going to be 20 years ago. So a hidden mic must've been this gigantic fanny pack with the batteries and everything. Yeah. And, And he gets hired as a junior salesperson. And the senior salesperson, who's in probably his early 30s, you know, they go through this whole process. This woman comes in, sells, you know, takes in their car for trade. It's a used car place, and sells her a new one. And she walks out the door, and the guy starts laughing. He goes, "What's so funny?" He said, "The car we got is better than the car we gave her. The car we gave her is a piece of junk.
And
we not only made money on selling the piece of junk, but now we have this better car that we can sell for more money."
Yeah.
That's a non-fiduciary relationship when somebody has no need to act in your best interest. Typically, in the financial end of things, it's focusing on fees versus commissions. Is fiduciaries tend to, not necessarily always, charge fees versus commissions. And the advantage of a fee is, number one, you know it's coming. You know exactly what you're paying. There's no hidden charges or anything like that. And you're going to get the charge no matter what they recommend. It's kind of like paying your doctor. Your doctor's a form of a fiduciary. Is they're going to act in your best interest. They're getting paid to act, and they're going to act in your best interest. Now, the downside is, like with your doctor, like with a lawyer, like with an accountant, and like with a financial advisor, they may not always act in your best interest. Is people want to hang their hat on, oh, this person is a fiduciary and this person isn't, so the fiduciary is automatically more trustworthy. Doesn't necessarily be the case. I had a situation just recently where a new client came in, and he's got an existing advisor nearby, and his portfolio is just it's in a million different directions. They are financial advisors. They are, fiduciaries, but 2/3 of his portfolio were in these awful, awful annuities that had no place in his portfolio. They just didn't belong at all. And then he had this other investment that was probably 10% of his portfolio. And it's been awful for him, and they've just done a terrible job. And he's like, "I just want to get rid of this specific one." What do you think they recommended? Another annuity with another massive commission. So fiduciaries can earn commissions as long as they follow certain rules. I would say personally, I would say this other advisor crossed the line. What's interesting is just in the last couple of days from recording this podcast is the Department of Labor has issued new fiduciary guidelines that encompass stockbrokers, insurance agents, things like that. Now, what I believe is they'll lose that in court. Department of Labor has no right to be really governing this. Is I get where they're coming from, but it's and I don't want to get into politics or legal stuff, but it's a Chevron deference issue. Is they're making things, they're saying, well, the law says this and the world changed, so we're going to change how we interpret that. That's not your job. That's Congress's job. And that's what the Supreme Court continues to say. So I think they're going to get kicked back on it, but I think it'll go back to, it has a good chance of going back to Congress at some point in the next couple of years of, look, we've got to curtail this. There is an issue with, commission-based, services. You're not being a financial advisor. It becomes an adversary relationship. And that doesn't mean that every person that charges commissions is bad. That's just not the case. There are some really very good people out there that do work on commissions. But it sets a better precedent if you're charging a fee. And it's funny. I came from 33 years ago when I started in this business. Commissions are better today, I will say that, than they used to be. There's still problems like this new client of mine. We used to go to these conventions. If you're a licensed stockbroker, you'll work for what's called a broker dealer. Merrill Lynch is a broker dealer. Smith Barney's a broker dealer. Most guys work for some small organization. And they'll have conventions. We go to the conventions. The conventions are paid for by the mutual fund companies, other people that'll sponsor it. And I remember going there. And you get wined and dined for 3 or 4 days, and that was okay. The single one I went to was in Newport. It was very nice, at a nice hotel. But they would do things like hey, look, if you sell $50,000 of a mutual fund, which doesn't sound like a lot of money, does it? Sell 50 grand of a mutual fund. We will send you via FedEx a lobster dinner. Live lobsters. Okay. In addition to the commissions you're going to get. All right. If you sell $150,000, we will, you know, we'll put your wife and you up for the weekend here at this lovely hotel. In addition to the commissions, in addition to the lobster dinner. If you sell $500,000 worth of this mutual fund, we're going to send you to the Bahamas for a week, you and your wife. Plus the commissions, plus the weekend away, plus the lobster dinner. And that's the adversary relationship. And it was awful back then. It was very cutthroat. If you read the industry press back then, especially like the magazines that were geared towards insurance agents, you would open it up and these full page ads on buy this annuity versus that annuity. And it was nothing about it. We're better because, we give a higher rate of return or we're a safer company. It's we're better because you're going to make 8% versus 6% commission. Wait, what? It was totally for that. And that's really been purged out of the industry. That's really been, you know, is the commission rates have gone way down. The products are better. You're not seeing all those extra incentives, but there's still those problems out there that you just have to be careful of. As long as you're aware of it, you want to be, that's the important thing. You need to be aware of what's going on there.
Well, then how would you recommend to a person to find a financial advisor? Is there a book that you can look people up and find reviews and things like that?
Sure.
I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I think the first thing you do is you want to look at what they're trying to do. I'll say it that way. Is are you dealing with your typical old school grinder type insurance agent, stockbroker, whatever? Or are you looking for somebody that's committed to helping people long term? One of them being, what's their educational requirement? And I'm not talking about college. College is great. College is important. But there are other degrees you can receive that show that you're committed to the industry. The gold standard these days is getting your CFP designation or Certified Financial Planner's designation. And it's kind of a weird designation in terms of I can't call myself, Dennis O'Keefe Esquire unless I pass the bar. It's illegal.
Right.
I can't call myself Dr. Actually, I could probably call myself Dr. Dennis humorously, but I can't call myself Dr. Dennis MD without passing some sort of board. And that's illegal if I do that. But with financial planning, there's really no, I have my Certified Financial Planner's designation. I've had it for 29 years. It's actually 29 years this month. I was looking at it yesterday. And that doesn't give me exclusive right to saying I'm a financial planner versus somebody else. But that program is the gold standard. It's people that are committed to focusing on being that fiduciary, being that person that looks out for somebody's best interest first, looking at their whole financial picture as opposed to just the investment or just the insurance, looking at everything. And the program involves either five or six core coursework. You got to take it's pretty much a college level class in investments, in insurance, in retirement, in estate planning, tax. There's one I'm missing. I can't think of the one I'm missing. I think it's six. It's been 29 years. And then at the end of that, there's a capstone that kind of encompasses it, which is really great because if somebody that's just coming into the industry, it allows them the sense of here's what it looks like to put together a whole financial plan for somebody. Here's what it's looked like to look at everything and then integrate it all together. And then you sit for I believe it's a 2-day exam, and it's brutal. It is brutal, and it's the whole thing. It's all six areas, and good luck. And once you get that, plus having, an internship in the industry, you obtain your Certified Financial Planner's designation. So that's like the gold standard. There are other designations people have. I will say there's one CHFC. It's CHFC, Chartered Financial Consultant. It may predate the CFP, and that is a very CFP-like program. But it's through the insurance industry. So know that the person that received that will have pretty much the same education requirements, but they're definitely an insurance person, which you just want to be aware of. It's not necessarily a bad thing. You just need to be aware of that.
So when a person goes to your website, they're going to see your certifications.
Yes.
Okay. So that would sort of be the first clue if you're looking. If you don't see any certifications, that, well, maybe you should continue to look.
Right.
I'm not, and I know you're not saying it, and I'm not saying it. That doesn't have to be the end all be all, but it's a clue, isn't it?
Right. All things being equal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are other designations out there. There's got to be 50 more of them.
Okay.
And to be honest, if you're looking for specialized education in something, that's great. There's, certified retirement planning, something or other, a certified long-term care, whatever, or certified this, or, all of this. What I tend to see is, you tend not to see somebody with CFP and then one of those other designations specializing in something. What you tend to see is maybe the CFP and then 15 of those other designations. And what that personally, this is my opinion. What that kind of says is there's a person that is just they may have a self-confidence problem. I'll say it that way if I get one more degree, I'll be all set. And I had a client years ago, that did this. She got laid off from her job. And she decided to go back to school. It may have been correspondence courses for this really obscure. I mean, it was obscure certification. And I sat down, I'm like, and what are you going to do with this? She said, oh, and I'm going to do this. And I sat there thinking, nobody's going to hire a 55-year-old who's never done this before to do that. That's something that it's a job that you start out early and you apprentice into, is what it came down to. And she thought she'd get this designation and just walk into this job. And a year later, she got her designation. And a year later, she still didn't have a job in the industry. And a year later, she still didn't have a job in that industry. It was just the designation she thought was going to be the end all and be all. And it just kind of told her the basics, but it didn't give her the details of how to do that job. My daughter went to my middle daughter, who works for me, is a horse nut. And she went through a 2-year course to do horse massage, which I thought was one of the funniest things I'd ever heard of when she told me she was going to do this back when she was in college. I'm like, are you serious? It's a big deal. It is a huge deal. Now at the time when she started this 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I was not working out. I was a couch potato. Man, now that I work out, and I work out hard every week, I can appreciate the need for massage, and I understand why she does what she does.
Interesting.
But there was a lot of hands-on, but that got her to the very beginning stages. Then she had to build a business above that. And that's what you tend to see with a lot of these people that have 5 or 8 different designations behind their name, is they're just trying to justify something as opposed to actually just doing the hard work and helping people.
So there's a balance between getting the certifications but then getting experience.
There is. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so then you didn't start off, you started off with a company and then went on your own. Is that
right?
Is that really the best way to go about it? Is that, or the normal way to go about it? Do you have to get experience?
It really depends. I've met people who have started on their own. I'll say this. I think it's an advantage. The company I worked for was a disaster. I was there for 15, 18 months. It was a disaster, but it taught me all the things not to do, which was great. It was like, oh, don't do this. Oh, don't do that. And I bumped into on LinkedIn or Facebook to one of my old colleagues from 30 years ago.
Wow.
And looked, and even 15 years ago, he was still doing business that way. And I'm like, it just wasn't a good idea to do business that way. He never evolved from, this guy that we're working for is a scammer. And he was, the principal of the company, turns out after the fact, was an extreme. I knew there was something wrong and I could never figure it out. And then several years after I had left, he gets arrested. because he was a scammer. It's like, oh, that explains all of these, what I thought were stupid things that he was doing them to cover up his lies. And not to say that this other guy was doing any of that, but just the processes that we had to go through because of that, he was still continuing because I don't know if he got, that's not what he should be doing, that he should evolve. So I've seen people that start at companies, they see people that stay at companies, just like law firms is when you look at lawyers, who's best, the guy that starts out his own shingle or works at a big firm or works at a big firm and then opens his own shingle, something like what I did. It really depends, I've seen financial advisors that have been independent their entire career. I think that it can lead to maybe a bit more integrity or show a bit more integrity. The downside is you're in a box. You're in a box that you've created and you don't get that experience of understanding everything else that's going on.
Something just popped into my head as you were talking, as far as, looking for a financial advisor. What if you have a financial advisor and you're not 100% satisfied, or you have questions that you don't, you're not getting the answers you think you should get? I mean, how do you deal with a person who approaches you and says, okay, I'm dealing with this person, but I'm not 100% sure. Can you look at my portfolio? Is that ethical? Is that non-ethical?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I had one of those just recently, and woman called me up out of the blue, found our website and wanted to come in. She had an account at Merrill Lynch, not any disparity to Merrill Lynch, because I didn't even see the investments, is what it came down to. I never even saw the investments and how they were. We didn't get that far. She had, I think, JP Morgan chasing her. She had just gotten laid off from her job. She was looking to make a move out of town and, retire in 2 years. And she just wanted an independent review of everything. And I looked at it and her situation every time I opened something else up, it was like, oh no. And I opened something else. Oh no. And there was just problem. We never got to the investments. And I actually got an email from her a couple of days ago. Yeah, I think I talked to Merrill Lynch and I'm pretty confident of their investments and how their process is. I'm going to stick with them. We didn't talk about investments. We talked about she was spending way too much money. She had massive amounts of credit card debt. She didn't know how she was going to pay for her own retirement. She had an adult child that was never going to have a great job, which meant that not only did she have to save for her own retirement, but she had to make sure that when she passed away, there was enough funds for that child, because for whatever reason, we didn't get into the reasons why that child that was in their late 20s, early 30s was never going to have a great job. None of those issues. And I think what happened was, I opened too many doors for her and scared the crap out of her. And I feel bad about that, because now she's just going to stick her head in the sand. But it was important for her to know that you're not asking the right questions, because she said, well, look, I talked to Merrill Lynch and they said, oh, I can totally have this much money per month. And I talked to JP Morgan. They said, you can have just about the same amount. I said, is that enough? Is that enough money for you? Is that the best thing for you? What's going to happen 10 or 15 years down the road? And those were the questions that scared her. She just wanted an answer of, can I have this much money per month? But that's we bump into that. I think that's a smart thing to do if you're not sure, is talk to somebody else. And I wasn't looking to take the business. I was looking to change her view of how she was looking at her situation. She was trying to simplify it, and that's how she got into the trouble. She had a lot of credit card debt. She had probably 40% of her income, her annual income, in credit card debt. That's a lot. That's a lot.
As a financial advisor, you're walking a fine line of, and it sounds like you, as you surmise, that you scared this person.
And yes.
You see things, and you then have to figure out, okay, I have to break the news to this person that they're making a lot of mistakes.
Right.
And that's not an easy thing to do, to tell someone, well, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, because people don't want to hear that. So how do you balance
that? Right. Yeah. I try to, I just gave her a glimpse. I didn't tell her half of it, a quarter of it. I just said, hey, what about this issue? And what about that issue? And how are you going to solve this? And how are you going to solve that? And she was just reeling from it all. It was, again, if you're in your, she was in her early 60s, and you have 40% of your income in credit card debt and don't own a home. She was renting. So she had, let's say her salary was $100,000 a year. And she's got 40 grand in credit card debt. That's a lot of credit card debt. That's a lot. That's way too much. And she's managing it by, well, I'll just, you know, I'll find another 0% card and we'll solve it that way. And you can do that. Eventually those run out. I watched that in 2007 of people trying to do all that. It's in 2001, same thing, trying to play all those games and it blows up. And I was just trying to gently say, how are you going to solve that problem and get into retirement? Yeah, she just wanted to know. She was just looking for, unfortunately she was just looking for a quick answer. But yeah, I try to be very, very, very gentle. It's feed them the bad news slowly, especially if it's not, you know, but none of the bad news I was giving her was time critical. It's stuff we've got to solve. And I already had ideas of, okay, I think we can do this. And I think we can do that. If we get to these calculations and we'll have to set up a plan and we'll, and all of that. That's kind of where we ended it. And I said, look, go home, think about it, figure out what you want to do. And if you want to do that, come back and see me. And she sent me a very nice email saying, hey, look, I'm going to stick with Merrill Lynch. I think I'm okay. And that's okay. And I respected her for sending me that email as opposed to just ghosting me, which is what most people just do. You know, they don't want to deal with it. So I was very happy about that.
So is there anything that you want to pass along that we haven't gotten to yet?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, if you want to check on your advisor, you know, is the best way. I'm not going to give you a website. Open your phone, open your computer, your laptop, go to your Google search and type in broker check. Enter. Whether your advisor is a stockbroker or an insurance agent or a fee-only financial advisor, you're going to be able with that on the first or second search result, you're going to be able to go to an SEC or a FINRA or some other website, be able to look up, figure out if they have a disciplinary history, figure out how long they've been in business, things like that. It'll give you at least a government view. It's a very sterilized government view, but will give you an idea of what's going on. That's very helpful. The other thing you want to look at, and probably the most important in my view, is specialization. Is the person you're working with an expert at what you need? We've been working with telecom people for 33 years. I'm an expert in that. I know what's going on with that. Retirement planning. I have been doing retirement planning for 33 years, probably brought several hundred, 500. I have to look it up, try and see if I can look it up someday. People through the retirement process. And that's a stressful process, is getting somebody that specializes in what you do. Some people need, you know, intense tax help or estate planning or insurance help, and you should deal with somebody that's working there. But specialization really is the key.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Any last words?
No, I think we're good to go. If you guys want to, you know, if somebody has a question or wants to get a hold of us, you can definitely jump down in the show notes through your favorite podcast app that you're listening. But going to our website is probably the easiest thing, www.successfulmoney.com.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Dennis. And we'll see you again at the next podcast.
Sounds great.
Thank you for listening to Your Telecom Retirement with your host, Dennis O'Keefe. Please click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. You can find information for Dennis, our guest, or resources mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Every individual situation is different. You should consult an expert before making any changes to your financial situation. For more information, please see our disclosure information at www.successfulmoney.com.